more of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. You'd be hard-pressed to find too many stories of people at the top of the music business who have not faced struggles or hardship along the way. But even within that context, Jeff Castellas is an extraordinary case. The Milwaukee native grew up in extremely challenging conditions here. He's dealt with abuse, professional challenges, alcoholism, and the death of a child, even as he has risen to become president of Elektra Records. Milwaukee writer Tom Matthews chronicles the remarkable story of Jeff Castellas in the December issue of Milwaukee Magazine, and he's with us now to tell us more about it. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
What made Jeff Castellas such a compelling character for you that you wanted to pursue this story in the first place?
Well, this story was brought to me by Christina Douglas, who was the previous editor of Milwaukee Magazine. I'd done several music-based articles for them, so she thought this would be a good fit for me. I knew nothing of Jeff. I didn't live here at the time of his sort of time on the music scene here. But I got a brief sketch of the arc of his life, which is fascinating. And once I got him on the phone and spent the past year interviewing him, it was a truly remarkable story with Milwaukee roots.
This is a guy who has had his share of lousy things inflicted on him, both as a young boy and in his adult life as well. Is his resilience really the story here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you mapped his life on a graph, the peaks and valleys are incredibly dramatic. He came from a broken home on the South Side. He was born in 72, which was when the divorce rate, in this country just went insane. His family fell apart. His parents split up when he was about three. His father, I think remarkably, got custody of Jeff and his two brothers because at the time I don't think the system was very refined in terms of determining custody. The father got a girlfriend. They opened a sort of a working class bar on the South Side. And she had kids, and they were all thrown together in this house.
But you're right. It was not exactly the Brady Bunch.
No, it was not. There was at times as many as 10 kids between the two relationships. The father spent all this time either at the bar or I believe he had a pretty good drinking problem. So they were left pretty much in the care of this girlfriend. And from Jeff's telling of the story, there was a great deal of emotional and physical abuse going on in this house from the time he was four or five until he sort of made his escape in his teenage years, about 16 or 17.
Hey, well, you're right that rock and roll was really kind of what got him through it. How did that play out?
Well, there were some older kids in the house, which is the way a lot of us sort of find our musical influences from older brothers and sisters. His space was this cold, windowless room in the basement, and he just descended deeply into rock and roll.
In kind of a productive way, though. He was like the kid that was reading the liner notes.
Yeah, remarkably, he was just on the very tail end of the vinyl years. So he had that experience of holding that album cover and reading, as I did, every word on there. But he found himself gravitating towards not so much the musicians as those who are in the orbit of the musicians, the manager, the producer, the label executive. He read some now classic books on rock bands. No One Here Gets Out Alive, which is about the Doors, was very influential. And at a very young age, he got this itch to thinking that there might be a future for him, not as an artist, but as someone who would work with artists.
Well, and it sounds like there were not a lot of really positive moments in terms of his parenting when he was young. But one of them might have been that he kind of got his people skills from his dad, which kind of let him get an entree into the music world, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really stunning part of his story is that as a very young kid, he would be made to work in this bar after school, but also before school, like at 5:30 in the morning, he and his brother and some of these other kids would go to this bar and clean the bathrooms and wash glasses and get this bar ready for opening. But also in watching his father, now he sort of, I think, bluntly ran the business of this bar. He learned how to deal with people in a way that served him very well as he proceeded with his career.
He had this longtime love for rock and roll. He started to get kind of some popularity in high school. He was elected student council president. What allowed him to actually make that leap into the music world?
Shortly after he got out of high school, he went to what was then Milwaukee Tech. He heard of there was an intern DJ program at WMSE. And he applied for that and got into that program, and they quickly saw how committed he was to music, and finally got an on-air shift from
wonderful time slot.
Yeah. Midnight on Sunday until 2:30. By this point, he was living with his mother and would make a bike ride once a week, loaded down with albums and CDs. And he loved it. He was in his early 20s, and sort of concurrent with the radio gig, he started writing about music for Downtown Edition, which was a weekly paper at the time, Milwaukee Magazine, and even some national publications covering both local bands but also national acts as they started coming through town. So suddenly he's face-to-face with Pearl Jam and Smashing Pumpkins and hit really the big time for a kid, really.
And it sounds like the pivotal moment for him was when he kind of gave a group a bad review and they wanted to meet with him.
At the time, one of the big bands in town was Wild Kingdom. He had reviewed them and took a couple shots at them for, I guess, not writing enough new material. So one of their key members sought him out, and Jeff thought he might be headed for a beatdown. But instead, they invited Jeff down to their rehearsal space and with the idea that perhaps he could manage them. Which at first he said, you know, I have no idea how to do this. But again, going back to all this reading he did and research he did, he realized this is that thing that he was sort of destined to do.
Well, and so what was the group that ended up being his big break in the industry?
Wild Kingdom broke up. Most members came back together as Citizen King about 94, 95. And Jeff describes it as not just a band and a career, but really a gang that he was welcomed into and sort of helped filling in some of those emotional holes he still had from his childhood. And for the next, you know, including his time with Wild Kingdom, he committed 8 years promoting these guys locally and then sort of the Midwest, and ultimately got them a major recording deal with Warner Brothers Records. You know, the story of rock and roll is the story of great rock and roll managers. Artists need that guy who's just relentlessly, ruthlessly committed to their act. And Jeff clearly was that.
But the story of rock and roll is also the story of rock and roll bands breaking up.
Yeah.
And that gig eventually ended. What was the set of circumstances that eventually put Castellas into the top position at Elektra?
Well, the first album, Mobile Estates, came out in, I think, 99. Did okay, not great. They had the one single that I think most people have heard, I've Seen Better Days, Then the Bottom Drops Out. They were getting ready for a second album, and through a set of really complicated interpersonal issues, the band just fell apart, which was devastating for everyone. By this point, Jeff had moved to Los Angeles. He had been spending a lot of time there on behalf of the band, and his friends and colleagues out there had sort of been suggesting he needs to get in a bigger pool if he really wants to reach all of his goals. So by this point, he was already in Los Angeles, and sort of the story of his life, he bounced back from this kind of crushing defeat. He worked as a manager for a while out there, and then with someone else started an independent record label called Danger Bird, which throughout the 2000s did, you know, very, very well at a time when the music industry was starting to unravel.
He ends up in management level jobs in the record industry, having founded this record label. It sounds like things are going pretty well for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's really sort of living the dream, and I would imagine thinking that having survived these dark years as a child, you know, that maybe life was good. He got married in the mid part of the decade. She had a son who he took on. But then in 2003, they had a son named Pablo. And Jeff is quite candid in saying that his goal was to give this child all the joy and light that he did not get in his childhood. And to hear tell, they had a good start at that. But in 2008, just shy of Pablo's fifth birthday, he was diagnosed with what's called Wilms' tumor, which is a very rare form of cancer that attacks kids. And he and his wife Joanne spent the next year trying to keep their son alive, all of which was documented by Jeff in this blog that he kept called PABlog, in which with excruciating candor he charts this year of trying to keep Pablo alive.
And in the end, he was unable to, which, again, just, you know, life dishing him something that's horrible that was really out of his control. He has since kind of really turned it into, if not a positive, certainly a force for positive things.
It's pretty remarkable. He had, by the point Pablo got sick, Jeff had become a deeply committed endurance cyclist. And turned to that as kind of therapy over the course of that year. While Pablo was still alive, Jeff had announced he was going to bike his way across the country as a show of support for his son. But when Pablo died just a few days after his sixth birthday, Jeff still made the ride with a team of supporters in tribute to Pablo. And also over the course of that period and then the years after, Jeff and his wife, I think his wife taking the lead, they started this foundation called PABLove, which has gone on to raise millions of dollars for research into childhood cancer, but also supporting children and families dealing with cancer.
So at this point, Jeff is the head of Elektra Records, which is a major label at a time when there aren't many major labels left. Where is Elektra in the industry today?
It's a subsidiary within Warner Music Group. It's hard to say exactly what a major label is anymore. They have a small number of acts. Fits in the Tantrums, which Jeff managed with Danger Bird, came to Warner Brothers and has really sort of exploded. That's kind of their big name now. They CeeLo Green, Ed Sheeran, people like that. But Jeff was taken on at Elektra, I think, in like August of last year. And the past year has signed a couple acts, but mainly is just trying to figure out how you make it work in this digital age of music, which has changed so dramatically from when he was a kid studying these record albums.
Do you get the sense he still feels anything towards Milwaukee?
He comes back on occasion. There's a PABLove concert here once a year, which I know he tries to attend. There's another one coming up this January. Local acts get together and they raise money for the cause. His brother still lives here, so he's here. I know when he is here, he tends to sometimes he's out checking out bands and things like that. He admits that he hears from a lot of Milwaukee artists and managers who, just like him, suddenly he's on the other side of the table getting harassed by an overly aggressive rock and roll manager. And he recognizes that, to the extent that he can, he will listen. He'll hear what you got and try to be responsive. But I would imagine he's probably a very popular man when he's in town. So he may keep a low profile.
Well, Tom Matthews, thanks so much for sharing this story with us.
No problem. Good to be here.
I've seen better days. I've been scarred.
Tom Matthews' profile of Milwaukee native and Elektra Records president Jeff Costellas is in the current issue of Milwaukee Magazine. You'll find a link to it, plus more information about the upcoming concert for the Pavlov Foundation, which Costellas founded, from WUWM.com/Lake Effect. The song we're hearing, by the way, is the 1999 hit Better Days and the Bottom Drops Out by the Milwaukee band that Costellas managed, Citizen King. Another whip in the glass, another chip in my tooth. One last break, and then a glimpse inside early 20th century Shanghai life with writer Amy Tan. That's when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. Better days, I've been starting.